From KCRW in Santa Monica, I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner, and this is The Business.
So you still want to do the show business, and you think that you got what it takes? I mean, you really got to rap and be all that, but prepare yourself for the breaks. Check it out.
This week on The Business, from Hannah Montana to High School Musical, we look at Disney's teen green-making machine. But first, it's the Hollywood News Caravan. Go nowhere, it's The Business from NPR. After a few days of consideration, the Screen Actors Guild has spurned the producer's last, best, and final offer, quote, for one reason and one reason only. It's not a good offer. So, it's a stalemate, and the town is left in limbo. This stalemate may not be rooted just in dollars and cents, but in some Byzantine union politics. SAG has until August 15th to ratify the producer's three-year, $250 million offer. But on September 18th, roughly one-third of SAG's board comes up for re-election. Many of those current board members ran on the promise of increased DVD residuals, and the current proposal from producers has none. Delaying contract approval until after the election means they may get to keep their jobs. Ironically, all of Hollywood may be out of theirs. If you think the credit crunch hasn't touched Hollywood, think again. Last week, the Financial Times broke the story that nearly $500 million in film financing recently fell through on 30 planned Paramount pictures. The studio had been working with Deutsche Bank on the deal, which would have included sequels to Transformers and a new version of Star Trek. Instead, Deutsche Bank has shuttered its film finance division. The FT said what scotched the deal with the Germans was, quote, a market-wide lack of enthusiasm for the senior debt component of the deal. But Deadline Hollywood Daily's Nikki Fink also points out that the departure of DreamWorks from under the Paramount umbrella may also have been a factor. Spielberg and company will depart next year thanks to $500 million in financing from Bollywood, which did manage to close, leaving Paramount with a much thinner slate. If things keep up like this, Paramount may actually have to spend its own money to make movies. Elsewhere, it appears that Hollywood's finally figuring out that piracy may be profitable. Rather than sue Google's YouTube, Lionsgate last week announced a new deal. They'll stop playing defense against fans who illegally uploaded hundreds of clips from films like Saw and Dirty Dancing and share in profits from ads sold against them instead. Starting in September, sharing, uploading, mashing up those clips will all be encouraged, since Lionsgate will actually make money from the traffic. Google's also in talks with other studios, though not Viacom, which is suing them for $1 billion over alleged piracy of Viacom content. In short, while Viacom hopes to put the horse back in the barn, Google wants to sell ads on the horse as it runs through town. We interrupt this broadcast to bring you positive news from the music business. Yes, EMI Records, the world's fourth largest label, is dancing in the streets. New private equity chief Guy Hans reported a £100 million improvement in the recorded music division's quarterly profits. Hans told the Manchester Guardian that efficiencies in marketing and promotion helped. Now, let us translate that from the English for you. By efficiencies in marketing and promotion, we mean that EMI has finally put a stop to claiming drugs and prostitutes on expense reports as fruit and flowers. And no, we're not making that up. And that's the Hollywood News Caravan. Coming up next, Disney's World. Whether you have kids or not, you'd have to be living off the grid to have missed Disney's omnipresent roster of teen stars. Miley Cyrus isn't just the star of Disney Channel's Hannah Montana. She was seen in the pages of Vanity Fair, infamously photographed by Annie Leibovitz. Zac Efron didn't just sing and dance his way through the High School Musical Disney TV movies. He was featured in the decidedly non-Disney musical Hairspray. These teen sensations have made an enormous amount of money for Disney and have helped turn Disney Channel from a Mickey Mouse operation to a teen touchstone. In fact, People magazine estimated that the Hannah Montana franchise alone will be worth $1 billion by the end of the year. Today, we're going to talk to Gary Marsh, president of entertainment for Disney Channels Worldwide and one of the architects of their success. And we'll talk to a new cog in the Disney machine, Michael Riley, senior vice president and general manager for Radio Disney. But first, a little background from our producer, Matt Holtzman.
Continue through the years, we won't forget the Mouseketeers, Mouseketeers. Disney's always been pretty savvy about the making and marketing of teen stars, but their recent success is something that'll make for a fascinating Harvard Business School case study if it hasn't already. And the focus of that study would have to be the phenomenon that is Hannah Montana. Hannah Montana, who is in reality 15-year-old Miley Cyrus, made business news headlines last year when tickets to her sold-out 70-day tour were selling for as much as $3,000 apiece. Miley's fame started just 2 short years ago with a Disney Channel TV show about a high school girl living a secret life as a rock star.
I just don't get it. Why won't you go to the concert with me?
It's just that, I really want to spend some quality time with my brother.
Of course, Hannah put out CDs and music videos, and 2 years later, there's a 3D concert film with her real-life dad, Billy Ray, Achy Breaky Cyrus, and of course, a feature film on the way. And oh, the merch. There are Hannah Montana karaoke CDs, Hannah Montana books, photo frames and bed comforters, backpacks and stationery, and tons of jewelry, dolls, toys, board games, video games, mobile games, ringtones, singing posters, and every possible item of clothing imaginable for your Hannah-obsessed little girl. Having a party, there are decorations and plates and cups and gift wrap and party favors, and you can even rent a Hannah Montana bouncy castle. And this is just the legally licensed stuff. But Miley Cyrus is only the biggest of Disney's past and current crop of stars.
Let's hear for Justin, Britney, and the gang singing I'll Take You There.
Yes, that's Britney Spears singing, and Justin Timberlake raps a little later in the song. Tiny Britney and Tiny Justin and even a tiny Christina Aguilera were stars of the early 90s version of the Mickey Mouse Club. The Disney Channel was young too, just 10 years old, and although MMC would launch these three and others to superstardom, Disney didn't really own a piece of them or have the businesses in place to capitalize on them. It wasn't until 2001 and Disney Channel's first real hit that a new business model was born.
School is actually a reality game show. People get voted out, and just when you think you have the rules figured out, they change.
Hilary Duff, starring as Lizzie McGuire, was the Disney Channel's first triple threat. She could act, she could sing, and she was infinitely marketable. Funny and nice and a little bit sexy in a chaste at Disney kind of way. All I know is you're not here to say what you're... So why is Disney so far ahead of the pack on the teen scene? Because they have an eye for talent and the businesses in place to create and capitalize on it. There's the Disney Channel and Disney Radio and Disney Films and Disney's music labels. And they're successful because they're genius marketers, with every star cross-pollinating with newer talent. The singing trio of heartthrobs known as the Jonas Brothers appeared on Miley Cyrus' show Hannah Montana and then opened for her on her tour. And suddenly, out of nowhere, they're huge. And of course, there are all those highly malleable teen hormones fueled by the internet. This is a YouTube clip of the Jonas Brothers being introduced during Miley's Best of Both Worlds tour.
Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God!
So who will be the next Miley Cyrus? Maybe it will be Selena Gomez from Disney Channel's Wizards of Waverly Place or Demi Lovato from Camp Rock. But you can bet that pretty soon, some talented kid you never heard of will be a Disney star you'd wish you could stop hearing about. For The Business, I'm Matt Holzman.
We sat down with Gary Marsh, the head of entertainment for the Disney Channels, and Michael Riley, the new GM of Radio Disney, in their offices in Burbank. Gary, Michael, welcome to The Business.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
How do the many moving parts of Disney fit together and work? How does radio work with records, with the channel, with the studio? Gary, you want to go first?
They're both formal and informal structures. The formalized structures are regularly scheduled meetings that start, honestly, at the very top of the company with the heads of all the lines of businesses coordinating, talking about what the major projects are for the company. It flows down from there into business heads talking to their colleagues across lines, to executives in the record group talking to executives in the content groups, talking to the executives at the radio company, more guerrilla meetings, you know, off the cuff. I would say, personally, I probably talk to the record group once a day about something, and probably more than that. And I suspect Michael has the same kind of relationship with different divisions of the company.
to use the ABC phrase, you know, start here. Is there a start here? I mean, does the talent come from any one place?
I think the beauty of the company right now is that there are multiple content creation engines. Disney Channel has become one of the primary ones, without a doubt. I mean, the paradigm traditionally for movie studios is that the content came from the movie studio. What's happened is we become a much more diversified entertainment conglomerate. Different divisions have taken up the gauntlet to create their own content.
Where does most of it come from? Can you point to one place? I mean, I realize it could come from anywhere. Where does most of it come from? Is it the record label? Is it just sort of dumb luck casting session where some kid comes in off a bus and you go, that's the star?
Almost all of Disney Channel talent is homegrown. That is simply the reality. We are the starting point, certainly for our own talent. Occasionally, we will be introduced to talent from other divisions by other executives in the company. But if you look at the lineup of kids who have broken out, from all the way back to Shia LaBeouf, to Hilary Duff, to Raven Simone, to the Sprouse brothers, to Hannah Montana, now Selena Gomez and Demi Lovato, these were people that we found, essentially groomed and helped launch, that other divisions were then able to take advantage of in different ways.
Now, Michael Reilly, you run Radio Disney.
Yes.
Let's talk about the incubator. What is Radio Disney's incubator, first of all?
The idea behind the incubator is very much to be out in the markets talking to new stars and new talent to figure out, is this something that we want to be looking at? And so we take opportunities in the incubator. For example, the Jonas Brothers we had in the incubator over a year and a half ago. That, you know, part of the overall Disney organization is how can we find talent and move that to places and figure out new opportunities for them. And that was a great opportunity.
How do these kids wind up in the incubator? I'm thinking here of, I'll throw out some names and you can talk about them a little bit. 3D from Pensacola, Florida. Victoria Acosta from San Antonio, Texas. Tyler Shammy from New Jersey. Who are these kids? And are we going to know these names as well as we know the Jonas Brothers in a year and a half?
We get sent on a weekly basis hundreds and hundreds of tapes. Kids exactly like what you just talked about. We were always looking on places like MySpace and outside, really, where these music communities are being established. And we want to reach out to those communities and figure out who's doing what. And those names that you've just mentioned, we have a team of people that are always looking at, in our programming group, that are always looking at fresh talent. And we're looking at unearthing.
So of the names we now know to be household names from Disney Channel, did any of them come through the incubator?
Absolutely. One of the top bands that we have right now, the Jonas Brothers.
The Jonas Brothers are a really good example for a couple of reasons. One, they got hatched and discovered by Radio Disney. But two, we found the Jonas Brothers for Disney Channel when they were still under contract to another label. They were at the time with Columbia. And we asked them to record the theme song and do a music video for one of our animated series, American Dragon Jake Long, still under contract to Columbia. That's where we discovered them as performers, if you will, not just as singers. We said to them at the time, gosh, we love what you do. We love the energy that you have. But I'm not interested in putting you on TV and making you a giant star while you're still under contract to another label. So if for some strange reason that label decides to drop you or you decide to move on, come on down. And in fact, that's what happened. And the moment they left Columbia, the record group stepped in, signed them to a recording deal. We stepped in, signed them to a television deal.
Have you been wrong before? Or is the strength of the Disney apparatus such that some degree of success will be realized no matter what?
It's hard to know what right or wrong means in this context. Certainly not every kid who comes through Disney Channel has turned into a superstar. What I like to believe, though, is that we've done a great job of matching up the talent with the roles that we have available. And our greatest asset, honestly, is our discipline, that we don't pull the trigger until we think we have that match. Zac Efron, we had in a pilot 3 years ago. He was fantastic. We knew we wanted to be in business with him. That wasn't the right vehicle, so we passed. But when we got ready to do High School Musical, he was first on our list to bring in.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Gary Marsh, the entertainment head of the Disney Channel, and Michael Reilly, the head of Radio Disney. We're talking about Hannah Montana, High School Musical, and Disney's teen greenmaking machine. So what is the grooming process like? I mean, what are your secret weapons in making sure that you get them to a point where they're, you know, emulatable and appealing, but not worrisome to mom.
There's a reality to the fact that these are kids, but they're also professionals. They got here because they had some ambition to do something that they wanted to showcase with the world. They understand there are parameters that they have to live within. It's not about acting out or not acting out. It's about being smart about their personas for the audience they're representing. These are largely business decisions for them in a funny way. I mean, if they want to take this core audience that we have, this 6 to 11, 6 to 14-year-old audience with them and embrace them and have them be embraced by them and grow up with them, they have to act appropriately. If they start acting out, which they do, we've seen it. Kids do this all the time. They take all sorts of chances. They take risks that every teenager does. There are ramifications for that, and they have to pay the consequences. Sometimes it's a personal consequence. Sometimes it's a business consequence. But they understand that going in.
So then what is the grooming process, assuming that I'm on board with all that as an actor or actress?
Well, we do have a dermatologist on call. No, I'm kidding. The reality is, as much as outsiders want to look at this as some crafted blueprint that we push into a machine, it comes out the other end, it just doesn't happen like that. Every one of these kids brings different fears, hopes, ambitions, dreams, talents, aspirations to the table. And some need more counsel in some areas, and some need less counsel in some areas. And honestly, the talent is very vocal. As I say, these kids have come up through the ranks. They know what works for them. They're really smart and savvy about their personas. What we try and do is take the energy that they project and mold it and craft it. I mean, it's not that we don't talk about these things. We do talk about it. But it's not something we sit down and formulate as some master plan. We talk about what styles are coming in the next 6 months so that we dress them appropriately. We look at, literally, it does go down to things as minute as nail color. I mean, there may be a certain color that is in right now. And so we're going to try and pay attention to that. But there is no formalized blueprint that we submit to the talent or their handlers and say, this is who you're going to be. We will fail if we do that.
How important, this might seem like a silly question, but how important is it that these kids who are acting can sing? Or that they be singers who can act, because it sounds like what your plans are for them are not merely that they have a successful Disney Channel show. To be a Disney star means something more than that. It means that you are going to probably be a brand unto yourself, and you will probably launch a record album or two. There may be a stage show. There may be a tour. There may be consumer products. There's an awful lot of weight that you have to carry and a lot of talents you have to bring to the table, it sounds like. Or can I not sing a note?
One of the things that we think about are the opportunities that the talent wants to explore. Some kids want to be singers. We make that available to them. I mean, I literally walked Hillary Duff over to the record company when she made clear that she wanted to have a recording career. Other kids don't have that ambition. Zac Efron, who could have probably a deal at any label he wanted right now, doesn't seem to have an ambition to be a singer. Someone like Raven Simone, who wanted to be a singer but also wanted to be a designer. We introduced her to Disney Consumer Products. She became really influential in the creation of the That's So Raven line of clothing that was launched. We talk about our brand mantras of express yourself and follow your dreams as what we showcase to the world, to showcase to our audience. Those are really the same things we ask our kids who are on our channel. What dreams do you have? Where can we slot you within the company so you can follow those dreams? Do they need to be a triple threat? Absolutely not. If they have that ambition, do we have that available to them? Absolutely.
Coming up after a short break, more about Disney's teen green-making machine. You're listening to The Business from NPR. You're listening to The Business, and I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. Ever since Annette Funicello, Disney has been the king of all things clean teen. And in the last decade, they've taken that experience, added some talented executives and new technology, and combined them all into a seemingly unstoppable teen green-making machine. They've taken popular TV shows and music, turned them into franchises featuring stars of their own creation, from Miley Cyrus to the Jonas Brothers to the stars of High School Musical like Zac Efron. We're talking with Gary Marsh, president of entertainment for Disney Channels Worldwide and one of the architects of their success. And we're also talking with a new cog in the Disney machine, Michael Riley. He's senior vice president and general manager of Radio Disney. I want to explore the form of Disney Channel a little bit. And it seems in some ways like this channel is a prepubescent HBO, in as much as there's no school bus confessions coming anytime soon, I don't think. But it does seem as though it has the ability, the luxury, in fact, to stick with shows longer than an advertising-supported channel. And I wonder if you could explore that. I mean, how much does the fact that this channel carries no advertising inform what you do?
I think part of the reason we've been successful is focus. We don't have the obligation to commission 80 pilots and produce 30 of them and get 10 of them on the air each year. And God willing, if you're successful at a commercial network these days, you have two left standing. We write 10 scripts. We probably produce two pilots for every one slot we have. And if we can throw our entire focus, our entire creative energy into making those shows work that we pick up, we just have a leg up on everybody else. It's simply a matter of time management to some degree. I can't afford to throw the spaghetti against the wall and hope it sticks. I only have two slices of spaghetti. So I think the focus is a primary difference. And that's how we have a relationship to HBO in that regard. In terms of the numbers, you're right. For the most part, we don't live or die. Our economics don't live or die on the basis of ratings. However, it is vital that we deliver an audience to our shows. If the shows aren't working, we don't keep them on. But I think the shows work because we focus on them.
When you look at the Disney organization, I think one of the great opportunities that we have is how to develop and how to look at the opportunities with the stars and the talent that we have. And I think Radio Disney, which is a different media, moving to being able to move them from the channel and into either a recording career or as we actually bring them into the studio much more one-on-one, we actually see a lot more of their personalities and can explore a lot more. We bring a lot of the stars into the Radio Disney studio to talk to the fans. We have a lot of call-ins and stuff. And from that standpoint, it's about exploring how can we make sure that, you know, that we're moving in a direction that the fans want to go into and that also that the talent wants to do.
Is there more traffic heading out from Radio Disney into the Disney Channel, or is it the other way around? Does it serve more as a means to propagate the faithful?
It's a balance, but and what really the opportunity is, how do we work together to make sure that A, we're serving up new opportunities and new content to Disney Channel, and the other way around is how are we also working with Disney Channel in order to make sure that we are also, you know, exploring what those opportunities are.
So here's what I want to understand is, when I turn into Radio Disney, what am I getting that I'm not getting from K-Rock or W whatever, whatever part of the country you're in, whether you're east or west of the Mississippi? What are you getting on Radio Disney that you're not getting elsewhere? First of all, am I only getting Disney artists?
What you're getting is the myriad of artists that serve that demographic. Now, as Disney, we tend to overserve that demographic. So you hear a lot of Disney artists, because we're the people that have been in that business for...
But
you know,
could I hear Avril Lavigne?
Absolutely. So if you look at our playlist on any given week, we play everything from David Cook to Avril Lavigne to all of our key Disney Channel stars to really what it is that our demographic, whether you're 6 years old or 12 years old or families, we also have, what we like to do is appeal to families as well. So sometimes we'll put songs in that appeal to the moms that are driving as well. So we play U2, Avril Lavigne.
Who's your audience? How old are they basically? It's 11 to what?
We target at the moment 6 to 12 year olds as our core audience, but it's really families with kids. So it's 6 to 12 year old kids with their families.
Hey, Claude, do you have kids?
8 months old.
So they haven't yet taken control of the dial. I have a 2-year-old.
Yeah, at least the ones I know about.
I have a 2-year-old, and it's amazing that at 2, she is dictating what will be played on the radio when we're in the car. And you have a choice. She's in the back seat, so you can make that choice.
And I have upper body strength. I can.
But guess what?
I can overpower.
You will make her choice. I promise you. When your child is old enough to express that preference, you will make that choice.
What's happening technologically that's changing the way that Disney does business?
I would submit to you that the one thing that hasn't changed is you have to start with great content. Because if you don't have great content, none of these other technologies have meaning for you, for success. They certainly have meaning for failure in the same way. Because what the technology has done has accelerated success and accelerated failure. In an instant, the word can be out that the Jonas Brothers performed in Toronto on July 4th, and there can be a million downloads by the next night of that performance. So what basically I have to ensure is that what we're creating is fantastic content because it is going to reach the audience faster and louder than ever before.
I was talking to a director named Jonathan Mostow who directed one of the Terminator movies, and he said the problem with word of mouth these days is that it's not powered by mouths. And I think that's good as to what you're saying, is that technology certainly determines whether or not you're a hit faster than ever.
Without a doubt. And honestly, for our audience, who are, you know, sort of becoming the techno generation, certainly the kids who are, you know, this 14 plus are there, but even the 6 to 14 year old kids have access to computers. They look for reviews. They look at the blogs. They pass along the downloads from their friends. This is viral marketing at its best and at its worst. You cannot control it. What you can control is the content. So it all goes back to making the great content. What it does allow us to do is deepen the connection. I mean, we can create new content that exists only on a nonlinear basis that the audience can engage with. And that is meaningful. I mean, actually, to your point earlier, maybe that is the big difference, that we're not restricted by one linear channel, so that we can add content, we can deepen the equation for the audience so they can better relate to the character.
Sorry, I was just adding to that. I think the opportunity here at Disney to look at each individual media to figure out how each of those pieces to the puzzle fit together is because there is all these platforms that are available, it's an opportunity for us to create content across each of those different media.
Gary Marsh is president of entertainment for Disney Channels Worldwide. Michael Riley is the general manager of Radio Disney. We joined them in their capacious conference room in beautiful downtown Burbank, as Johnny Carson used to say. Gary, Michael, thanks for being on The Business.
Thank you, Clyde.
Thank you.
A postscript, we conducted this interview in the Disney Channel's offices in Burbank, and on the way out, Radio Disney GM Michael Riley offered to take us inside the network studios. There, we saw a 15-year-old from Savannah, Georgia, named Samantha Uten, who was being interviewed by a Disney radio station in Dallas.
Well, I was just born singing since I was two, and I've always been singing with, you know, the Disney movies, and ever since then, I just have known this is what I wanted to do.
There were lights and cameras in the studio. Two teen reporters were taking notes while her producer and her parents sat by smiling. Although Samantha is still unsigned, you could really feel the thrum of the star-making apparatus coming to life. And that's The Business. Matt Holzman produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. Our associate producer is Darby Maloney. You can listen to this or any past program online anytime at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You can also podcast the show on KCRW's site or through iTunes. Our email address is thebusiness@kcrw.org. The Business is produced by KCRW Santa Monica and distributed by National Public Radio. I'm Claude Rodesser-Ackner. We'll see you next week on The Business.
See you real soon.
K-E-Y.
Why? Because we like you.
Hey.